Good afternoon. Welcome to the May episode of Hot Topics, hosted by HCAM TV in Hopkinton, Mass. My name is Ken Clark. I'm the retired fire chief from Hopkinton, and I was very blessed to work 44 years in the town of Hopkinton in multiple positions, and got to do a lot of great things and meet a lot of great people in the town of Hopkinton. And today, our guest is William T. Hamilton Jr., who everybody knows as Bill. Bill was one of the first four career firefighters in the town of Hopkinton. And I'm going to switch this over to Bill now and let him kind of give us his bio from the time that he came in 1963. And we can go from there. And Bill and I go way back. We worked together for 30 years. And one of the really, really interesting things about Bill, he always helped people. If you had a question, he always answered it in the right way. And he's been blessed to be retired for over 30 years. So right now I'm going to hand over to Bill. Bill, welcome to my show, and welcome to Hot Topics.
Thank you. Thank you, Kenny. Excuse me. I actually started working for the town when I was 14. I worked for Nelson McIntyre in the cemetery and cutting brush on the side of the road, whatever, until I went in the Navy in 59, and I got out in 62, and over the years, I worked full-time for the water department a couple of years, and then part-time for the water department, and I came on the call department on the auxiliary in 63, and as Kenny said, I got appointed as one of the first four full-time firefighters, and after we got Chester Randall and I got appointed, and Dick Bartlett and Arthur Stewart. Arthur was the chief, and Dick was, the two of them had worked about 4 years before that day. They all worked days. And then when Chester and I come on, we started, got out of firefighting school, we started covering the town 24 hours a day, and it has been covered 24 hours a day ever since then. I actually, the way it worked out, I actually worked the first scheduled night shift Hopkinton ever had. And Kenny was one of my probies. During the years, there would usually be two or three kids in high school interested in the fire department. But when Kenny came along, there was about 12 of them. So I hadn't been on the department too long, and Arthur called me in the office one morning, and he says, "I got a job for you. There's a bunch of kids here. I need you to train them all." So that was a trip. We did some pretty, we had a lot of great times together, and they became known as the Savages, and I was a leader of the Savages. So that went on for quite a few years, and Kenny and his brother Franny and his cousin Mike, Tommy McIntyre, all the guys that age, Jimmy Danahy, and they had a muster team, and they had the old Woodville fire engine. Arthur Stewart let them use that to go to musters, and it was a pretty neat time. A lot of the girlfriends were involved, and it was a really active time for the young people. And unfortunately, we don't have that anymore. So I was blessed to another little incident. There was no such thing as EMT then, and we didn't have any ambulance, and we used we had one fire and one police cruiser, one of each, and they were station wagons, and we used them for the ambulance. So I've been asked several times, "Well, how did you do CPR?" Well, back then there was no such thing as CPR. Mm. And we got trained by Red Cross First Aid, so I complained to Arthur. I said, "You know, every 2 years I got to go sit in the same thing over and over." And one day he called me up to his office. It wasn't good to get called into Arthur's office. Something was happening.
I know, a couple of times for me.
I got called in, and he said, I got it fixed so you don't have to sit through those boring first aid classes anymore. He says, "Oh, great." He says, "Yeah, I signed you up tomorrow night. You're going to start to Framingham and start to learn to be an instructor so you can teach the courses. So instead of having to sit through one course a year, I had taught all the firefighters, all the police officers, Girl Scout leaders, Boy Scout. It was like, instead of one time sitting through them, I had to teach them six times every 2 years. So, and then EMT came along, and before that, four of us became graduates of Harvard. We got sent to, before EMT came along, Chester and Dickie and I and a woman from Woodville, Nancy Peters, was a nurse. Arthur was trying to get her to join the ambulance crew. And the four of us went to Harvard for a week and into extensive courses. It was very interesting. And, but when EMT came along about 2 years later, we still had to go through that. So I was just grateful to be a firefighter for 30 years. And most of the time, I can describe firefighting. 98% boredom and 2% sheer terror. So.
Yeah. As soon as that phone rang, that old.
Yeah.
And, just listening to you talk brings back so many memories. And one of the things I had from on my questions list here is I can remember on the station wagon ambulances, they had the cots in that were folded in half, and you unfolded it and clicked the wheels down on the front, and the back had like little pegs that went down, right. And the cars were set up. You would roll the back seat down, roll the stretcher in, and they had the little catches like a well that right. The front wheels went in,
yeah.
And someone always have to go around to the door and make sure they were seated in there, and then when that was done, you could put the back two pegs in the holes that the pegs went into that were made into the car floor,
right.
That was a fit afterwards, and that was like a perfect fit for that type of stretcher. And then why don't you bring us up to speed a little bit, what it was like going to the first EMT, and then my next question would be a description of the first ambulance, and I worked a lot with you on that. That was the International, the white one with the extended roof?
Right. the EMT courses we had to, the basic course was at Framingham Union Hospital. We went there, but we did, I think I'd like to go back one step to describe firefighting school.
Yep. Oh, yeah. Yep. Winchester.
It was a very new thing. The very first course, Arthur Stewart was one of the, and several other chiefs around here were instrumental in starting a firefighting school in this area. Dick Bartlett got to go to the very first firefighting school, and then like 3 years later, Chester Reinlett and I went to the third class, and they had it at Cushing Hospital. We had a classroom in the old gym. Excuse me. There was an old broken down, I think it was a Ford 38 or 39 engine there, and we kind of used that. But when we needed a pumping up evolution, we'd always do that in the afternoon, and Chester and I would go come back to Hopkins at lunchtime and bring engine four to use in the class to teach people to run the pump and stuff. And when we needed a ladder truck, one of the guys in the class was from Framingham, and they'd bring their ladder truck after lunch. So it was kind of, and they had some hose and ladders and stuff, but it was donated from all the departments, and it was junk. You had to wear gloves using the ladders because they were old, worn-out ladders, wooden ladders that had slivers, and the hose was the stuff made during World War II. When you rolled it up, instead of a nice small roll, it ended up being about 3 feet high, and it was stiff as a board. And so it was great training, and I got to do firefighting with some of the instructors later in my career. And so fast forward to about 2 or 3 years ago, my wife and I were driving around one day, and we were over in Stowe. So I says, you know, I haven't been at the academy for a long, long time. I think I'll we'll stop in. So we drove in there, and I couldn't believe it. My mouth was open.
State of the art.
It's huge, and they got new engines, new everything. And I went in, and fire marshal, Stevie Cohen, used to hang out with Rick McMillan and Hopkin and all the time, come to our clam bakes and stuff. So we really knew him good. And when there'd be a serious fire, and he'd come on the TV, and I'd say to my wife, I know him. I don't think she really believed me, but the day we went in there, I walked into the office and told him who I was, and she says, well, Stevie Cohen's right in the cafeteria. Go in and see him. So I went, hey, Bill, how you doing? So I told him, my wife, I thought, well, bring her in. We'll get somebody to go through the academy. Amazing, the academy, which he was pretty much responsible for building the size it is.
Mm, yep, definitely.
I was saying we had the third class was like 2 years after the first class. They have, I believe, at least two classes going on at the same time over there all the time now. Yeah. And when everybody gets out of they graduate, everybody always puts all the names on a plaque and leaves it there. So this woman that was showing us around, she showed us the hallway where all the plaques are. We went all the way back, and there is the third class plaque, and with Chester and my name on it. Chester was president, and I was vice president. They made me vice president to make sure Chester got there on graduation day to do the speech, because if he did, I'd have to do it. So, but it was yeah. Amazing, the fire academy now, and I imagine the training is. I mean, we were so far back that they had a life net that you open up and people jump into the life net, and that was part of our training. After I got into the fire service, I never saw one again.
Yeah.
And so, yeah. And then starting the EMT was mostly in Framingham, and then every 2 years you still had to go and recertify, and that could be kind of boring, and we used to do Leonard Morse quite a bit, and there was my favorite recertification course was Chief Barry from Marlboro did a thing about law and the EMT, and it was every time it was different. It was very interesting. Yeah. That, and we used to go to Liberty Mutual. They had this skid school down here in Hopkinton, and we'd go down there every 2 years, and it was really fun. You'd get in the car and you'd drive about 40 miles an hour, and you'd whip the wheel and spin around, and it was really neat to have a couple guys that had never done it before in the back seat.
Yeah.
They'd turn white and everything, but those are my two favorite things to get always every 2 years. So.
But that EMT, when you started, was groundbreaking. There wasn't,
right.
That was like, we had one of the first groups tell by the numbers were low. Even my number was low.
Yeah.
And it was like, but you guys were in.
Well, at the end of my career, when you go to a recert courses, you had to put your name and your number down. And everyone the last couple of years had to say, okay, come and look at this number. Look at how low this guy is.
And mine was even low. Mine was AO6901.
Yeah.
I still remember it. It's ingrained. And it was like, and you guys were probably down in the...
Some of us got to go to the second class because Arthur had the thought that if we'd gone to the Harvard thing, we didn't need to go. And the first bunch of guys went, and then he found out we had to go too. So we ended up in the second class.
Yep. But that just changed the whole EMS system in the town of Hopkinton, and we were able to put EMTs out on the street, which was a vast improvement. When you talked about the first aid before, I remember when you taught that, it was Red Cross advanced first aid we got. It
right,
was like
the
high-end first aid stuff, and it's like, and all that stuff is still the basics of whatever you do at whatever level. You know what I mean? A lot of the stuff on the bleeding and things like that.
I'm coming up on 31 years retired, and it's gone that much further ahead. At the end of my career, the hospitals had you'd get an ambulance call if it was anything other than a cut finger, probably. You'd have a, they'd come from the hospital, that the paramedics would come from the hospital to assist you. And I'll never forget one call. We had an accident on Chestnut Street. A young lady took off a pole, and she was sitting in the car, and she said, I'm okay. And the paramedics came, and we did what you're supposed to do. We splinted her up, and what you had to do after the person was in the ambulance, and the paramedics would go in the ambulance, and one of us would have to drive their vehicle back to the hospital. And you had to stay within about 100 yards of the vehicle to make their radio work. So I got to do that once.
Yeah.
And the end of that story is I was working on duty the end of the next week, and this lady came in with a young lady. The young lady had a halo traction splint, and she came in to thank us. She had a broken neck.
Yeah.
And she came in to thank us.
There was no loss of mobility. Remember that. It was loss of mobility.
No, nothing. She was fine. If we hadn't done that, who knows? She might have been paralyzed from the neck down. So
I remember you guys taught us, look at the mechanism of injury.
Right.
And if it drives it, when you take that full precaution for the patient, C-spine, all that,
And now, 30 years later, everybody's a paramedic. And, we used to run with the police department. There was only one of us on duty, one firefighter. So the drill was we'd put the alarm out, wait for one guy to come in. If you could get two guys, you'd go off in the ambulance, and the police would meet you there. And when you went to the hospital, the police would drive the ambulance, and the firefighters would be in the back, unless there was a person that was under arrest. Then the police officer had to ride in the back. But many times, one of us would bring the police cruiser back to the station because the only
on the scene.
Officer.
But I think that was a really positive thing for a lot of different reasons, especially the one that sticks in my mind is when you think of those guys at that time, police officers who were EMTs and our EMTs, we rode to the hospital with them, then we got cleaned up at the hospital, put everything back in service and came back. We were able to interface with them, and I knew what Pat O'Brien's family was Mike Hamilton's family, what they were doing, what they had been doing, and we had a really, I think the relationships were closer than they may be now. Not that they're not now, but it was just a different relationship because we shared much more those responses.
And going back a step further, before we had full-time firefighters, Joe Pine was the chief, and he lived two houses up from the station. And originally, if you had a call, you'd call in, and the operator at the telephone company would blow the alarm. And she had some way of letting them know where the fire was. So then the big problem was when dial came in, what are we going to do during the day? And Margaret, the chief's wife, Margaret, took over answering the phone, and she'd call over where the fire was to the first guy. He'd write it on the blackboard, take off in the first engine. And at nighttime, they had fire phones. Family had one. Dick Stewart up the Grove.
Arthur. Did Red.
And when there was a call, quite often when I'd be working at night at first, if it was like some kind of investigation, when the person got done telling what was going on, Arthur would stay on the phone and said, Bill, I'll check it out. So I'd go down and get on the radio, and he'd call in and either call for somebody to come or say we're all set. I took care of it. Yep. And the other thing about cooperation, way back then, before there was anybody on duty, Margaret had a list, and she would call the highway department. She'd just call, whoever answered the phone, she'd say, house fire at 10 Main Street, and hang up. And she'd call the water station, same thing, my father at the pumping station. Pines Pit, she had like six numbers, people that couldn't hear the siren blow, and that's how they got guys. And then later on, when somebody in the town needed a project, like one time, the highway department got their first chipping machine, and they needed a a basket to blow the chips in the back of a dump truck. And Arthur was a welder, and he brought it up, and he cut all the things out. We were on duty. We put it together for the highway department, and we cooperated. We did stuff for each other, and there was a lot less people working. And when it snowed and we needed hydrants shoveled, we'd get some of the call guys that come in to get paid for going out with the two water department and the fire department pickup truck and shoveling, just manually shoveling the hydrants. And it was a total cooperation.
And what you just said reminded me of another thing when you talk about working with the departments. I can remember but prior to the water department having a K-12 saw, when they had to cut some ductile iron, they would bring it up here.
Right.
We would cut it and then bevel the edge so the rubber gasket would fit on there when they put the pieces together in the ground for a water break or whatever they were doing. And we would do the cutting with our K-12 out of the rescue.
Right.
And, I can remember those days.
I used to alternate summers. I worked for J.C. Palmiter a lot. And I worked for the water department, so I'd go to see who needed the help in the summer the most. And one summer, they had put new water main up Grove Street and down Hayden Row, and they had this tapping machine, and I was good on the tapping machine because I'm pretty good size, and I spent two summers tapping water services up and down the streets on my days off.
Probably did more with the house I live in now.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah. But going back into the EMS, I can remember it was prior to my getting there, but it was early. It was pretty new with that first ambulance. They finally invested, got away from the, they used the cruisers as like a backup, and then they got that first international, the white travel all. It wasn't all-wheel drive, which was surprising, but it was like
stretched out and stretched up.
Yeah, exactly.
You couldn't. I think the only one that could stand up in that was Billy Lukey.
Yeah, that's right. That was like it was hunched over.
We got that, and Southboro was the same almost day. They got their first ambulance, and they had a Cadillac.
Yeah, whatever.
They both did the same job.
Yeah, exactly.
In fact, ours was a little better in the winter.
Exactly. Yeah. They had those studded snow tires on it. Remember, they used to sometimes would make a mark on the front ramp at the station.
Yeah.
It'd spin a little bit coming in during
It was really slippery out one day, and there was a new police officer, and he was trying to back the ambulance in the station. I says, let me do it. I'll do it. So I got in the ambulance and backed it up and promptly slid sideways, hit the side of the building.
Yeah. But I remember that. But that bay at that time also was used for, that front bay was two vehicles, so it wasn't a straight back in.
Right.
It was like two things parked in one bay, so you had to kind of kitty-corner it in and fit it in like a wedge. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep, interesting times. And it was like, but that had that, talking about that, remembering that on the cot, on the side, on the passenger side, that had the holding so that you could put that stretcher that we talked about earlier in there, and if you had to, you could transport two personnel,
two people. Yeah.
If you had the manpower.
Pretty tight, but you could.
Yeah, it was tight, very. And then we transitioned to, I remember all the modular ambulances. We had the Ford E350s and the Fs and a bunch of different things, and now they're up into the really high-end models now that like that are made to for the paramedics, and it's like really, really interesting to look at them and see what they can do now.
When I started, the rescue truck was there was a guy across the street, last name was Evelyn, and he was Eggman. He had a powder blue little panel truck, and the thing was in excellent shape. If he was halfway to Boston and the oil needed changing, he'd stop in the nearest gas station. So when he got a new truck, the fire department got it, painted it red, and loaded it down. So one of the thing would even move. So Arthur wanted a new rescue truck. We got an international chassis. And one day I was working, he brought the chassis up from Farrah's, and he had a stick with numbers on it and rulers, and he had me back slowly and stop, and he measured. We had to cut the back down.
It was bevel.
So it wouldn't hit the
ceiling, the angle going in.
He designed the thing, and it had water on it so you could do car fires. It had
the heavy winch.
It had all the tools, and the K-12 had just come out.
Yeah,
and it had a bank of air bottles in there so we could charge our
SCBA.
Our breathing apparatus is at the fire scene, and it was quite a design. And we were in an accident when we first had it, and the state cops saw it. So we were 4th of July weekend one time on a Friday night. We got a call to the Auburn-Millbury line. The police, the state cop had seen our cruiser, and a car had been driving about 60 in the breakdown lane, and there was a broke-down lobster truck there, and the car drove under the, and there was the guy in the back, they got him out, but the two guys in the front, we had to take the car apart. But we thought, going on the call, we thought we would never get there. I said, why are we going here? Well, the guy had seen our rescue and knew we could do the job and call it. And we saved one of the guys, but the passenger passed away. Yeah. The lobster truck came right through the car.
And then that was the same one that in, I think it was 73 or 74, we were the first community in the area to have the Jaws of Life.
Yeah, and before they even came out, three or four of us from the department on our days off, they had two of them over the academy, and we went over there and tore cars apart for a whole day at leisure, putting the parts to run the K-12, and we were the first ones to experiment with them to see what worked and what didn't work.
Yeah, I can remember watching them when we first got it, had the Ford Falcon. We folded it right in half in the backyard of the firehouse.
Yeah, and then we also experimented with Ted's of Fayetteville, because the guy in Hopkins and Moran ran that, with the airbags.
Yeah.
When they first come out with the airbags to lift heavy, heavy weight, we went and worked with them and found out what worked and what didn't.
I know when I was chief, I got the second generation of those. We still had the original ones that were good and just starting to get tired, and we replaced those and got the next generation.
Yeah.
When I was there, it's like, all that stuff that we went all over the place. Milford would call for it, we'd go out. And that's when they first, prior to them, like really hammering the drunk driving, we did so many extrications all parts of the year. In the winter, it was the weather. And then in the summer, it was all the bad accidents we had in everywhere. Hayden Row, into South Street, you name it, we did it.
Worst snowstorm of the year was the first half inch of snow every year.
Yeah.
That's all it took.
Everyone had to relearn how to drive in the snow. Yep. So let me get to some of my questions I have for you. It's how is your family, and how, and could you explain to us, like, your family history with the Hopkins Fire Department?
Well, my father came on the call department in the mid-30s and continued on until we both were on for about 5 years. And he was the clerk at the Combination One, forever. And they used to run clam bakes, and he had all the money, and they used to use regular silverware, and I got to paid $10 to wash it. It took me about 3 days, and I'd always get $10 for it, and I could either get silver dollars, because somebody came with silver dollars, and I always took silver dollars. They'd last me longer. Yeah. So,
and I think most of the questions I had for you today we've already chatted about in our discussion together here. The thing, we're getting close for time. Okay. The only thing I wanted to do is, I got some questions that have been sent in, and I encourage people who have questions about the fire service, EMS, you can send them to my email address, which is hottopics, HOTTOPICS, at hcam.tv. And I got some questions today that we'll go over and answer them. You'll smile, you'll get some of them. From Mike in Ashland, in the old days, firefighters had beards. Why don't they wear beards anymore? In the old days, prior, and I used a term earlier that I didn't get a chance to fill it out, was SCBA, it's called self-contained breathing apparatus. And those are the tanks you see on the guys' backs when we go to a fire-type emergency or a hazmat. In the old days, before those became into service, guys would grow the mustache really long and beards, and that would be the initial filter for the nose inhaling smoke during incidents, and that's what they used before that. They thought it worked. They would always wet them beforehand so they collected the soot and stuff, and guys would come out of fires. I can remember some of them, and they would be all, the mustaches would be all black because they breathed in all the smoke. Again, That's why we had so many illnesses in the fire department after we retired. And now we have the SCBA, and it's still kind of cool to have beards for the fire department. But the thing about it now is you see them really short because they have to maintain the seal on the new mask that they wear. And if you have a lot of hair here, the seal is compromised. That was a good question I got from somebody. From John in Hopkinton. Why do so many people respond to medical emergency incidents? Like, I've had some people question me that since I retired as chief. And usually you see four. The call goes into 911 into the police station, is triaged, and they send the ambulance crew, which is a minimum of two. That's required by OEMS, the Operations and Emergency Medical Services at the state, at DPH. And then there's the shift officer goes, who's the lieutenant, or he designates two people to go. And sometimes the call is ends up to be different from what's triage, so they might need a third person to drive the ambulance so they can drive, or if it's on the second or third floor, it's good to have the manpower to extricate people from a house.
We used to be lucky to get two.
Yeah.
And I got burned out in the ambulance because I lived the closest full-time guy to the station, and I lived in the back of the ambulance, and it got the last couple of years of, I wondered if I had had another serious call like I had one time. I won't mention names, a little girl that we did bring back, but she died the next day. If I had another call like that, I don't know what would happen.
Yeah, we all have those, and I tell my wife, that's it. The door shut there. I don't try not to open that door.
Yeah.
You know, I got one more question. And from Dan in Hopkinton, what do firefighters do when they are not responding to emergency calls? Usually a shift starts with orientation for the day. Everyone gets together. They check their riding assignments. If you're on the ambulance, make sure that gear is all ready to go. If you're assigned to the ladder or the engine, all that gear is ready to go. And when we used to do it with Bill and I, we had one person to do it. Now everyone does what the function that they have. And then there's a training schedule for each day that they're on duty. There's a lot of calls now. I think they're up over 3,500 calls now.
We cleaned a lot.
Yeah, we did a lot of cleaning.
There was only one guy on.
Yeah, and we swept the floor a lot, cleaned the trucks.
A lot of times you'd have no calls during the day, which was good for everybody. And sometimes I'd be sweeping the floor 10 minutes after I come on duty, get a call, put the broom against the wall, and at 5 o'clock or after, I would go and put the broom away because we were going all day.
Yeah, it's like, that's the end of our episode 3. I want to thank Bill so much for coming in. Him and I have been really, really close for years, and I was really close to a lot of members in his family, his first wife and his second wife, and then his kids. I know them all, and it's like from. And thank you very much.
You're welcome.
For coming to my show.
It's an honor to be asked to do this.
Yeah, you know what I mean. You have a lot to share, and I'd like to thank you all for watching our episode today, and I look forward to having you watch down the road. Watch our other episodes of Hot Topics at HCAM.